Krishnamurti, in dialogue with Dr. Alan W. Anderson. J. Krishnamurti was born in South India and educated in England. For the past 40 years, he has been speaking in the United States, Europe, India, Australia, and other parts of the world. From the outset of his life's work, he repudiated all connections with organized religions and ideologies and said that his only concern was to set men absolutely, unconditionally free. He is the author of many books, among them The Awakening of Intelligence, The Urgency of Change, Freedom from the Known, and The Flight of the Eagle. This is one of a series of dialogues between Krishnamurti and Dr. Alan W. Anderson, who is professor of religious studies at San Diego State University, where he teaches Indian and Chinese scriptures and the oracular tradition. Dr. Anderson, a published poet, received his degree from Columbia University and the Union Theological Seminary. He has been honored with a Distinguished Teaching Award from the California State Universities.
Mr. Krishnamurti, I was very taken with a recent statement of yours in which you said that it's the responsibility of each human being to bring about his own transformation, which is not dependent on knowledge or time. And if it's agreeable with you, I thought that it would be a splendid thing if we explored together the general area of transformation itself. And after we've done that, perhaps the other related areas would begin to fall into place, and we could bring about in conversation a relationship among them.
Don't you think, sir, considering what's happening in the world, in India, in Europe, and in America, the general degeneration in literature, in art, and especially in the deep cultural sense, in the sense religion.
Yes.
There is a traditional approach, a mere acceptance of authority, belief, which is not really the religious spirit. Seeing all this, the confusion, the great misery, the sense of infinite sorrow, any observant and most serious people would say that this society cannot possibly be changed except when the individual, the human being, really transforms himself radically, that is, regenerates himself fundamentally. And the responsibility of that depends on the human being, not on the mass or on the priest or on a church or a temple or mosque or whatever, but on a human being who is aware of this enormous confusion, politically, religiously, economically, in every direction. There's such misery, mm-hmm. such unhappiness. And when you see that, it is a very serious thing to ask oneself whether a human being like oneself or another, whether he can really deeply undergo a radical transformation. And when that question is put to him, and when he sees his responsibility in relation to the whole, then perhaps we can discuss what relationship has knowledge and time in the transformation of man.
I quite follow. we'd need then to lay some groundwork move into the question itself.
Yes. Because most people are not concerned with the world at all. Most people are not concerned seriously with the events, with the chaos, with the mess in the world at present. They're only concerned very superficially. Problem of energy, problem of pollution, and so on. Such superficial things. But they're really not deeply concerned with the human mind. The mind that is destroying the world.
Yes, I quite follow. What you've said places, in a very cardinal way, the radical responsibility on the individual as such, if I've understood you correctly.
Yes.
There are no five-year plans that we can expect to help us out.
The word individual really is not the correct word, because individual, as you know, sir, means undivided, indivisible in himself. But human beings are totally fragmented. Therefore, they are not individuals. They may have a bank account, a name, a house, but they are not really individuals in the sense. A total, complete, harmonious whole, unfragmented. That's really what it means to be an individual.
Well, would you say then that to move or make passage, or perhaps a better word simply would be change, since we're not talking about time, from this fragmented state to one of wholeness could be regarded as a change in the level of the being of the person?
Yes.
Could we say that?
Yes. But you see, again, the word whole implies not only sanity, health, and also the word whole means holy, H-O-L-Y.
Mm-hmm.
All that's implied in that one word, whole. And human beings are never whole. They're fragmented. They're contradictory. They're torn apart by various desires. So, when we talk of an individual, the individual is really a human being who is totally, completely whole, sane, healthy, and therefore holy.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring about such a human being is our responsibility in education, politically, religiously, in every way.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it's the responsibility of the educator, of everybody. Not just myself, my responsibility. It's your responsibility as well as mine, as well as his.
It's everyone's responsibility.
Absolutely, because we have created this awful mess in the world.
Mm-hmm. But the individual is the one who must make the start.
A human being.
Right.
Each human being, it doesn't matter whether he's a politician or a businessman or just an ordinary person like me in the street, it's our business as a human being to realize the enormous suffering, misery, confusion there is in the world. And it's our responsibility to change all that. Not the politicians, not the businessmen, not the scientists. It's our responsibility.
When we say our responsibility, and we have two uses of the word individual now, there's the general use of it, meaning a quantitative measure.
Yes.
And then this qualitative reference that we've simply needed, it seems to me, to discern as a possibility. I'm reminded again of the statement that you made that I quoted earlier, that it's the responsibility of each human person.
Human being, yes.
Right.
Whether he's in India or in England or in America or wherever he is.
So we can't slip out of this by saying
We have created this, therefore we must change it.
No.
We get back to, well, if the change is going to start at all, it's going to be with each.
Yes, sir.
With each.
With each human being. Therefore, the question arises from that. Does a human being realize with all seriousness the his responsibility not only to himself but to the whole of mankind?
It wouldn't appear so from the way things go on.
Obviously not. No. Each one is concerned with his own little, petty little, selfish desires. Mm-hmm. So, responsibility implies tremendous attention, care, diligence, not negligence as now it is going on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do follow that. The word we that we used in relation to each brings about the suggestion of a relationship which perhaps we could pursue here a moment. There seems to be something indivisible, apparently, between what we refer to by each, or the individual person as the usage is usually construed. Seems to be an indivisible relation between that and what we call the whole, which the individual doesn't sense.
Sir, as you know, I have been all over the world, except behind the Iron Curtain and China, bamboo curtain. I've been all over. And I've talked, seen dozens and thousands of people. I've been doing this for 50 years. And more. Human beings, wherever they live, are more or less the same. They have their problems of sorrow, problems of fear, problems of livelihood, problems of personal relationship, problems of survival, overpopulation. And whether this enormous problem of death, there is a common problem to all of us. There is no Eastern problem and Western problem. The West has its particular civilization, and the East has its own. And human beings are caught in this trap.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I follow that.
And they don't seem to be able to get out of it. They're going on and on and on for some millennia.
Therefore, the question is, how does he bring this about?
That's
as an each, as a one? The word individual, as you've just described it, seems to me to have a relationship to the word transform in itself. And I'd like to ask you whether you would agree in this. It seems that many persons have the notion that to transform a thing means to change it utterly without any relationship whatsoever to what it is as such. That would seem to ignore that we are talking about a form that undergoes a change, which form itself still abides.
Yes, sir, I understand.
Otherwise, the change would involve a loss.
So,
at the total
are we asking this question, sir? What place has knowledge in the regeneration of man, in the transformation of man, in the fundamental, radical movement in man? What place has knowledge, and therefore time?
Fine.
Is that what you're asking?
Yes, for? Yes, I am. Because either we accept that a change, that is, a genuine change, means the annihilation of what preceded, or we're talking about a total transformation of something that abides.
Yes. So let us look at that word for a minute.
Good.
A revolution, in the ordinary sense of that word, means, doesn't it, not an evolution, a gradual evolution. It's a revolution.
No, it doesn't mean that, then. Right, I agree.
A revolution is generally meant, if you talk to a communist, he wants to overthrow the government. If you talk to a bourgeois, he's frightened. Mm-hmm. If you talk to an intellectual, he has various criticisms about revolution. Now, revolution is either bloody,
yes,
or revolution in the psyche.
Yes.
Outward or inner?
Outward or inner.
The outward is the inner. The inner is the outward. There is not the difference between the outer and the inner. They are totally related to each other.
And this goes back to what you mentioned earlier, that there's no division, even though intellectually you make a distinction
that's right.
between the I outer. And the we.
We, that's right.
Yes, of course.
So, when we talk about change, we mean not the mere bloody revolution, physical revolution, but rather the revolution in the makeup of the mind.
Of each person.
Of human beings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The way he thinks, the way he behaves, the way he conducts himself, the way he operates, he functions, the whole of that. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that psychological revolution, not evolution in the sense, gradualness.
No.
What place has knowledge in that?
What place has knowledge in something that occurs?
In the regeneration of man, which is the revolution, the inward revolution.
Which will affect
the outer.
Yeah, which is not a gradual progress.
No, obviously.
No, right.
The gradual process is endless.
Exactly. So we're talking about an instant qualitative change.
Right. Again, when you use the word instant, it seems as though suddenly it is to happen. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm rather hesitant in using the word instant. We'll go into it in a minute. First of all, sir, let's be clear what you and I are talking about, if we may. We see objectively the appalling mess the world is in, right?
Yes.
The misery, the confusion, the deep sorrow of man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
I can't tell you what I feel when I go around the world. The pettiness, the shallowness, the emptiness of all this, of the so-called Western civilization, if I may use that word. Mm-hmm. Into which the Eastern civilization is being dragged into. And we are just scratching on the surface all the time. And we think the mere change on the surface, a change in the structure is going to do something enormous to human beings. On the contrary, it has done nothing. I mean, it polishes a little bit here and there, but deeply, fundamentally, it doesn't change man. So, when we are discussing change, we must be, I think, fairly clear that we mean the change in the psyche, in the very being of human beings. That is, in the very structure and nature of his thought.
A change at the root.
At the root.
At the root itself.
Root. And therefore, when there is that change, he will naturally bring about a change in society. It isn't society first, individual or individual first. It is the human change which will transform the society. They are not two separate things.
Now, I must be very careful that I understand this precisely. I think I discern now why, in the statement, you said, which is not dependent on knowledge or time.
Yes.
Because when this person changes, this each human being changes. The change that begins in society is a change that is in a non-temporal relationship with the change in the each
That's
human
right.
being. Yes,
sir, after all, human beings have created this society. By their greed, by their anger, by their violence, by their brutality, by their pettiness, they have created this society.
Precisely.
And they think by changing the structure, you're going to change the human being. This has been the communist problem, this has been the eternal problem. That if you change the environment, then you change man. They have tried that in 10 different ways, and they haven't done it, succeeded in changing man. On the contrary, man conquers the environment, the structure. So, if we are clear that the outer is the inner is the outer, that there is not the division, the society and the individual, the collective and the separate human being, but the human being is the whole. He is the society, he is the separate human individual, he is the factor which brings about this chaos.
Yes, I'm following that very closely.
He is the world, and the world is him.
Yes. Therefore, if he changes,
the whole thing
everything changes. If he doesn't change, nothing changes.
I think this is very important because we don't realize, I think, this basic factor that we are the world and the world is us. That the world isn't something separate from me and me separate from the world. You're born in a culture, Christian or Hindu or whatever culture you're born in, you are the result of that culture. And that culture has produced this world. The materialistic world of the West, if one can call it, which is spreading all over the world, destroying their own culture, their own traditions. Everything is being swept aside in the wake of the Western culture. And this culture has produced this human being. And the human being has created this culture.
Exactly.
I mean, he has created the painting, the marvelous cathedrals, the marvelous technological things, going to the moon and so on, so on. Human beings have produced it. It's the human beings that have created the rotten society in which we live. It's the immoral society in which we live, which human beings have created it.
Oh, yes, there's no way to know that.
And therefore, the world is you, you are the world. There is no other thing. If we accept that, if we see that, not intellectually, but feel it in your heart, in your mind, in your blood, that you are that, then the question, is it possible for a human being to transform himself inwardly and therefore outwardly?
I'm very concerned to see this as clearly as I can in terms of two texts that come to my mind, which we could say possess an inner meaning. And because of this inner-outer thing that we've spoken about in the divided approach that is made to Scripture, there's a tremendous irony here.
Yes.
I'm thinking of that, to me, wonderful text in St. John's Gospel, in the third chapter, which says, and I'll try to translate this as the Greek has it, the one who is doing the truth is coming to the light. It isn't that he does the truth,
and then
later he comes to the light. And it isn't that we could say from the pulpit, I will tell you what the truth is. If you do it, then you'll see the light. Because we're back again to what you mentioned earlier, the non-temporal relationship between the action, which itself is the transformation.
Yes, correct.
And the marvelous vista of understanding, which is not an if-then thing, but is truly concurrent. And the other one that I thought of that I was hoping you might agree in is saying the same thing, so that I understand it well in terms of what you've said, is, and again I'll try to translate it as literally as I can, God is love, and the one abiding in love is abiding in God, and God is abiding in him.
Correct, correct.
I've put the ing on all those words because of the character of the language itself. It doesn't read too... One wouldn't want to translate that for pulpit reading, perhaps, but that's the real sense of it. And this inging along gives the feeling that there's an activity here.
Oh,
That is not bound by temporal
relations. It isn't a static state. It isn't something you intellectually accept it and leave it like that. Then it's death. There's nothing in it.
Yes.
That's why, you see, sir, we have divided the physical world as the East and the West. We have divided religions, Christian religion, and Hindu, Muslim, Buddhist. And we have divided the world into nationalities, the capitalists, the socialists, the communists, and the other people. So we have divided the world, and we have divided ourselves as Christians, non-Christians.
Yes.
We have divided ourselves into fragments, opposing each other. So where there is a division, there is conflict.
Precisely.
I think that's a basic law.
Where there's a division, there's conflict. But in terms of that word knowledge, it appears that people believe to start with that that division is there.
Yeah,
and they operate on that radical
why,
belief. Isn't
that's
that right?
Why I'm saying it's so important to understand from the beginning in our talk, in our dialogue, that the world is not different from me, and I am the world. It may sound simplistic, but it has got very deep, fundamental meaning if you realize what it means. Not intellectually, but inwardly, the understanding of it. Therefore, there is no division. Moment I say to myself, when I realize that I am the world and the world is me, I am not a Christian nor a Hindu nor a Buddhist, nothing. I am a human being.
I was just thinking when you were saying that how certain kinds of philosophical analysis would approach that, and in terms of the spirit of what you've said, this really is almost a cosmic joke. Because on the one hand, as you said, it might sound simplistic. Some would say it is. Therefore, we don't have to pay attention to it. Others would say, well, it's probably so much in want of clarity, even though it's profound, that it's some kind of mysticism out
there. I know. And
we're back and forth with the division again. As soon as that happens.
That's right.
Yes, I do follow you.
So, if that is clear, that there is that human mind has divided the world in order to find its own security, which brings about its own insecurity. When one is aware of that, then one must inwardly as well as outwardly deny this division as we and they, I and you, and the Indian and the European and the communist, you cut at the very root of this division. Therefore, from that arises the question, can the human mind, which has been so conditioned for millennia, can that human mind, which has acquired so much knowledge in so many directions, can that human mind change, bring about a regeneration in itself and be free to reincarnate now?
Now. Yes.
That's
the question.
Question.
Exactly. Reincarnate.
Now.
It would appear from what you've said that one could say that the vast amount of represented knowledge, an accretion of centuries, is a discussion we've been having with ourselves, regardless of which culture we're speaking about, as a commentary on this division.
Absolutely.
Without really grasping the division itself.
Yeah.
And of course, since the division is infinitely divisible...
Of course. Why don't you divide? Go on division.
Exactly. Then we can have tome after tome after tome, libraries after libraries, mausoleums of books without end, because we're continually dividing the division.
That's right.
Yes, I follow you.
And you see, that's why culture is different from civilization. Culture implies growth.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Now, growth in the flowering of goodness.
Lovely phrase. Lovely phrase.
That is culture. Real culture, the flowering in goodness. You understand, sir?
Yes.
And that doesn't exist. We have civilization. You can travel from India to America in a few hours. You have better bathrooms, better this and better that, and so on, with all the complications that it involves. That has been the Western culture, which is absorbing the East now. So, goodness is the very essence of culture.
Mm-hmm.
Religion is the transformation of man. Not all the belief churches and the idolatry of the Christians or the Hindus. That's not religion. So we come back to the point. If one sees all this in this world, observes it, not condemn it or justify it, just to observe it, then from that one asks, man has collected such enormous information, knowledge, and has that knowledge changed him into goodness? You follow? Into a culture that make him flower in this beauty of goodness. It has not.
No, it has not.
Therefore, it has no meaning.
Excursions into defining goodness is not going to help us.
I mean, that you can give explanation, one definition, but that's not... Definitions are not the reality.
No, of course not.
The word isn't the thing. The description isn't the described.
Precisely.
So, we come back again.
Yes, let's do.
Because I personally am tremendously concerned with this question. How to change man? Because I go to India every year for 3 months or 5 months, and I see what's happening there, and I see what's happening in Europe, I see what's happening in this country, America, and it's something I can't tell you what shock it gives me each time I come to these countries. The degeneration, the superficiality, the intellectual concepts galore, without any substance, without any basis or ground in which the beauty of some of goodness, of reality can grow. Now, So saying all that, what place has knowledge in the regeneration of man? That is the basic question.
That's our point of departure.
Departure.
Good. And the knowledge that we have pointed to so far that has emerged in our discussion is a knowledge which in itself has no power to effect this transformation.
No, sir, but knowledge has a place.
Yes, I didn't mean that. I mean, what is expected of this knowledge that we pointed to that is accumulated in libraries is an expectation which it in itself cannot fulfill.
No, no. I must go back to the word again, the word knowledge. What does it mean to know?
Well, I have understood the word in the strict sense this way. Knowledge is the apprehension of what is. But what passes for knowledge might not be that.
No, what is generally accepted as knowledge is experience.
Yes, what is generally accepted.
We'll begin with that, because
right.
That's what...
Let's begin with what is generally accepted.
Experience, which yields or leaves a mark which is knowledge. That accumulated knowledge, whether in the scientific world or in the biological world or in the business world or in the world of the mind, the being, is the known. The known is the past. Therefore, knowledge is the past. Knowledge cannot be in the present. I can use knowledge in the present.
But it's funded from the past.
Yes, yeah. But it has its roots in the past.
Yes, I follow.
Which means, that's very interesting, whether this knowledge which we have acquired about everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You read any... I personally don't read any of these books. Neither the Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, none of the psychological books, nothing. I'm not a reader. I have observed tremendously all my life. Now, knowledge has its place. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, yes.
Let's be clear.
Yes. Oh, yes, in the practical order.
Practical, technological.
Exactly.
I must know where I'm going.
Precisely.
Physically and so on,
yes,
so on, so
yes.
on. Now, what place has that, which is human experience as well as scientific knowledge, what place has that in changing the quality of a mind that has become brutal, violent, petty, selfish, greedy, ambitious, and all the rest of that? What place has knowledge in that?
Well, going back to the statement we began with, namely, that this transformation is not dependent on knowledge,
no.
Then the answer would have to be, it doesn't have a place.
Therefore, let's find out what are the limits of knowledge.
Yes, yes. Course.
Where is the demarcation, freedom from the known?
Yes.
Where does that freedom begin?
Good. Yes, now I know precisely the point at which we're going to move from.
Yeah.
Where does that freedom begin?
Begin.
Which is not dependent on this funded accretion from
That's
the past.
Right. So, human mind is constructed on knowledge.
Yes.
Has evolved through millennia on this accretion, on tradition, on knowledge.
Yes.
It is there. And all our actions are based on that knowledge.
Which by definition must be repetitious.
Obviously.
Of course.
And it is repetitious.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is the beginning of freedom, mm-hmm. in relation to knowledge. May I put it this way, make
yes.
myself clear?
Yes.
I have experienced something yesterday that has left a mark. That is knowledge. And I, with that knowledge, I meet next experience. So, the next experience is translated in terms of the old. And therefore, that experience is never new.
So in a way, what, if I understand you correctly, you're saying that the experience that I had yesterday, that I recall,
recollection, yes.
Recollection upon my meeting something new, that appears to have some relationship to it. I approach on the basis of holding my previous knowledge up as a mirror in which to determine the nature of this new thing that I have confronted.
Quite.
Yes. And this could be a rather crazy mirror.
Generally it is. So, you see, that's what I mean.
Yes, I follow.
Where is the beginning, or where is freedom in relation to knowledge? Or is freedom something other than the continuity of knowledge?
Must be something other.
Which means, it's very, if one goes into it very, very deeply, it means the ending of knowledge.
Yes.
And what does that mean? What does it mean to end knowledge? Whereas I have lived entirely on knowledge.
It means that immediately.
I mean, see what is involved in it, sir. I met you yesterday. And there is the image of you in my mind. And that image meets you next day.
Yes? Yeah.
The image meets you.
The image meets me.
And I have a dozen images. Or 100 images. So, the image is the knowledge. Mm-hmm. The image is the tradition. Mm-hmm. The image is the past. Now, can there be freedom from that?
If this transformation that you speak of is to happen, is to come to pass, there must be.
Of course, therefore, how is the, we can state, but how is the mind which thrives, acts, functions on image, on knowledge, on the known, how is it to end that? Am I? Look, take this very simple fact. You insult me or praise me. That remains a knowledge. Uh-huh. With that image, with that knowledge, I meet you. I never meet you. The image meets you.
Exactly.
Therefore, there is no relationship between you and me.
Yes, because between us, this has been interposed.
Obviously.
Yes.
Therefore, how is that image to end? Never to register? You follow?
I can't depend on someone else to end it for me.
Therefore, what am I to do? How am I? How is this mind, which is registering, recording all the time, is the brain, function of the brain is to record all the time. How is it to be free of knowledge? When you have done some harm to me, personally or collective, whatever way, you have insulted me, you have flattered me. How is the brain not to register that? If it registers, it's already an image. It's a memory. And the past then meets the present. And therefore there is no solution.
Exactly.
I was looking up that word the other day in a very good dictionary. tradition. Mm-hmm. It means, in, of course, ordinary word, tradare, is to give, hand over, give across. But it also has another peculiar meaning, not peculiar, from the same word, betrayal.
Oh, yes, traduce.
Tradu. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in discussing in India this came out, betrayal of the present. If I live in tradition, I betray the present.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do see
which
that.
Which is knowledge betrays the present.
Which is, in fact, a self-betrayal.
That's right.
Yes.
So,
yes.
How is the mind which functions on knowledge, how is the brain which is recording all the time,
yes,
to see the importance of recording and not let it move in any other direction? That is, let me put it this way. Very simply, you insult me, you hurt me by word, gesture, by an actual act. That leaves a mark on the brain, which is memory.
Yes.
That memory is knowledge. That knowledge is going to interfere in my meeting you next time. Mm-hmm. Obviously. Now, how is the brain, and also the mind, how is the brain to record and not let it interfere with the present?
Well, the person must, it seems to me, take pains to negate.
No. See what is implied. I know, but see, well, how am I to negate it? How is the brain to whose function is to record, like a computer, it's recording.
Yes. I didn't mean to suggest that it negates the recording, but it's the association, the translation of the recording into an emotional complex.
How is it, that's just the point, how is it to end this emotional response when I meet you next time who have hurt me? That's the problem.
That's the place from which we, in the practical order, in our relation to ourselves, must then begin.
Yeah.
Exactly. There is an aspect of this that interests me very much in terms of the relation between the theoretical and the practical.
Sir, to me, theory has no reality.
Well, let me put it this way.
Theories have no importance to a man who is actually living.
May I say what I mean by theory? I don't think I mean what you think I mean by it. I mean theory in the sense of the Greek word theoria, spectacle. What is out there that I see. And the word is therefore very closely related to what you've been talking about in terms of knowledge. And yet it is the case that if we see something, that something is registered to us in the mind in terms of a likeness of it. Otherwise, we should have to become it in order to receive it, which in the material order would annihilate us. It seems to me, if I followed you correctly, that there is a profound confusion in one's relationship to that necessity for the finite being and what he makes of it. And insofar as he's making the wrong thing of it, he's in desperate trouble and can only go on repeating himself and in such a repetition increasing despair. Have I distinguished this correctly?
You see, religion is based on tradition. Religion is vast propaganda, as it is now, in India, here, anywhere else, propaganda. of theories, of beliefs, of idolatry, worship. Essentially based on the acceptance of a theory.
Yes, yes.
Essentially based on an idea.
A statement, a postulate.
I mean, there are ideas put out by thought.
Right.
And obviously, that's not religion. And that so religion as it exists now is the very denial of truth.
Yes, yes, I'm sure I understand you.
And if a man like me or like wants to find out, discover what the truth is, he must deny the whole structure of religion as it is, which is idolatry, propaganda, fear,
yes,
division, you're Christian, I mean, all that nonsense, and be a light to oneself. Not in the vain sense of that word, or light, because in darkness, the world is in darkness. And a human being that has to transform himself has to be a light to himself. And light is not lit by somebody else.
So there's a point at which he must stop repeating himself. Is that correct?
Okay.
In a sense, we could use the analogy perhaps from surgery. Something that has been continuous is now cut.
Yes.
And cut radically. Not just fooled around,
sir,
but
we,
really cut.
We haven't time to fool around anymore.
Exactly.
The house is on fire. At least I feel this enormously, that things are coming to such a pass, we must do something, each human being. Not in terms of better houses, better security, more this and that, but basically to regenerate himself.
But if the person believes that in cutting himself from the secretion, that he is killing himself, then he's going to resist that idea, isn't
he? Of course, of course. Therefore, he has to understand what his mind has created. Therefore, he has to understand himself.
So he starts observing.
Himself.
Himself.
Which is the world.
Yes. Not learning five languages to be able
God
to construe.
That's all I know about. No, no.
Yes, yes.
Of going to schools where you learn sensitivity and all that rubbish.
The point that you're making, it seems to me, is made also by the great Danish thinker Kierkegaard, who lived a very trying life in his own community, because he was asking them, it seems to me, to undertake what you're saying. He was saying, look, if I go to seminary and I try to understand what Christianity is by studying at my desk, then what I'm doing is appropriating something here. But then when do I know when I've appropriated it fully? I shall never know that point. Right. Therefore, I shall forever appropriate it and never do anything about it as such, as a subject, the person who must risk the deed, not the utterance of what someone has said before, or not simply thinking through what someone has thought before, but actually embodying the meaning through the observation of myself in relation to that.
Quite, quite.
And that has always seemed to me a very profound insight. But one of the ironies of that is, of course, in the academy we have an endless proliferation of studies in which scholars have learned Danish in order to understand Kierkegaard. And what they're doing is, to a large extent, if I haven't misjudged the spirit of much that I've read, is simply perpetuate the very thing he said should be cut. I do have this very strong feeling that profound change would take place in the Academy, of which you know I'm a member. If the teacher were not only to grasp this that you've said, but take the risk of acting on it, since if it isn't acted on, if I've understood you correctly, we're back again where we were. We have toyed with the idea of being valiant and courageous, but then we have to think about what's involved before we do, and then if we don't do.
Quite.
We think and don't do.
Therefore, sir, the word is not the thing. The description is not the described. And if you are not concerned with the description, but only the thing what is, then we have to do something. When you are confronted with what is, you act. But when you are concerned with theories and speculations and belief, you never act.
So there isn't any hope for this transformation, if I've understood you correctly, if I should think to myself, that just sounds marvelous. I am the world, and the world is me, while I go on thinking that the description is the described. There is no hope. So we're speaking about a disease over here, and we're speaking about something that has been stated as the case. And if I take what has been stated as the case, as the case, then I'm thinking the description is the described.
Of course.
And I never get out.
Sir, it's like a man who is hungry. Any amount of description of the right kind of food and the beauty of the food will never satisfy him. He's hungry, he wants food. So, all this implies, doesn't it, sir? Several things. First, can there be freedom from knowledge? And knowledge has its place. Mm-hmm. Can there be freedom from the tradition as knowledge?
From the tradition as knowledge, yes.
Can there be freedom from this separative outlook? Me and you, we and they, Christian and all this divisive attitude or activity in life. Those are the problems we have to...
That's what we must attend to as we move along through our dialogue.
Yes. So first, can the mind be free from the known? I mean, not verbally, but actually.
But actually, yes.
Then I can speculate about what is freedom, what is all the rest of it. But see the necessity, the importance, that there must be freedom from the known. Otherwise, life becomes repetitive, continuous, superficial scratching. It has
no
meaning.
Of course. In our next conversation together, I hope we can begin where we've just left off.
This program was a production of KPBS-TV in San Diego.